Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our annual OU Kosher Pre-Pesach webcast. We're in the presence of our eminent OU poskim, Roino Rav HaGaon Rav Yisrael Alevi Belsky Shlita, Rosh Yeshiva of Torah V'Das and Senior OU Posek, and Moreno Rav Hirschel Shechter Shlita, Rosh Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan and Senior OU Posek. As always, we're pleased that Rav Eli Gerstein, who is the recorder of the OU Policy and Psak, is here with us, as is my chaver and colleague, Rabbi Elio Farrell, who works with me several years already, Baruch Hashem, on many, many of the OU Kosher educational programs. I'm thrilled to be able to welcome a new audience of Achenu B'nai Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. The OU Kosher webcast is now also live on Arutz Sheva, so that many, many of our chaverim and friends in Eretz Yisrael are able to join with us here at OU headquarters in New York for the OU Kosher webcast. I, again, as the last webcast, give additional shevach ve'odah to the Ribono Shel Olam that Moreinu Rav Belsky Shlita is with us. Last year, unfortunately, we missed the OU Kosher webcast because of Rabelsky's illness, and Baruch Hashem, we're so happy and thrilled that he's here with us for many, many years to come.
No, Baruch Hashem, amen, can you?
We have received many, many shilas by email, and shilas can still be sent to farrell@ou.org, to Rabbi Farrell's email. His assistant will bring up those questions. And as always, any questions that we're not able to respond to during the webcast could be sent in to my email, safranee@ou.org, and we will try, Mirta Shembuli Neder, to respond to those emails as well. We're going to begin to ask both poskim about what I see has become in the last number of years the million-dollar shaila. There used to be a $64,000 question. Now there is a million-dollar shaila, and that is being asked on all websites that I have seen. Many, many questions have also sent it in this year, as in past years, and that is in regard to quinoa. I often think about what my babbis, Aleihem HaShalom, would say if I would even bring up the term quinoa. They didn't eat any of that on Pesach. But seemingly, many, many Achenu B'nai Yisrael are eager to know what our Rabbonim, the Poskim, say about the status of quinoa. Is it ketnius or not? I'm going to ask the same shaila both to Rav Belsky and then to Rav Shechter.
Look, the first thing that comes to mind, is there an iser ketnius on any new product that wasn't around a long, long time ago? And when the minig began in the time of the Rishonim, of the earliest Rishonim who bring it, so they weren't magdir, they didn't set the limits and describe precisely what's included in kittis. But the Achronim, they bring a number of different things. The Taz brings, if you have seeds that look like wheat or grain, barley, and so on. So then they were geyser because the seeds could be mistaken for wheat, or at least if you eat that, then you might come to eat other kinds of grain, which could turn into chometz. Another description is that it's harvested and processed the same way that's called digun. Well, digun is that the seeds, the plant is threshed so that they get out the pot with the seeds and then separate out the chaff, the psoilus, and finally do other things to isolate the seeds from whatever was there before. That's called digun, to clean up the dogon. And So the things that there was a minhag not to eat belonged to that category, which went through that same cleaning process known as digun. Another thing that was said was there were certain seeds that were grown because of the climate and the earth conditions for growing. They were grown close by together with chometz grain, and that too is b'shalom. Maybe it would be mixed with that the type of grain that turns to chometz. There are other reasons. And over the years, there were certain things that were added to the list. Sweet corn, cow corn, is a type of plant that we're familiar with here in America, and they call it corn, and that's where most of the corn grows. In other places, they call it maize, and it's cornstarch is made from that. It's pretty widespread that, despite the fact that that grain wasn't even around in the time of the Rishonim, and it's something new, afal pi kein, they add it to the list. It's accepted all over. What about quinoa? On one side, it perhaps is a lot different, and it's grown a lot different, and processed a lot different than wheat. But midach kisa, it's used in those countries where the quinoa grows, and it's used pretty much in the same way as grain. It's dried out and ground up and turned into a flour, and the flour is used to make mezainis, cake, cookies, and even bread. So, in a certain way, it's extremely similar to a kidney is. The seeds don't look like wheat, and it's not near wheat fields, and it doesn't mix with wheat. But midach kisa, it produces the exact same product, and it's used in the same way that wheat is used. I thought many times to myself, it became fashionable in recent years, it will be discussed later, about cottonseed, to consider that kidney. Although the seeds are never eaten, and there's no digun, they're never grown together with wheat. Afal pi kein, cottonseed became a candidate for being called kidney. There's a stroll. Most people don't use cottonseed. Here in America, we do. But with all this put together, quinoa is much more similar to the classical kidneys, because it's a harchoke from using flour and things which resemble cake and cookies and bread. That's what I think. But I would never, issue a psak saying that I feel it's definitely yosser. It's kedai to hold off on for eight days on eating quinoa, because it seems for the poshet that it would fall into a category that the kadmoinim would have considered kidneys. But I could hear very reasonably that someone should say it's mutter, it's not kidneys, for a number of the reasons that I mentioned before. That's about all I have to say about quinoa.
I personally thought that, like Ramosha Feinstein, how would the law lossy follow? Ginuk with the kidneys, we have all the things that we accepted already. Shankinuk, I don't think we have to accept more. But the hashgachas of the OU have to be approved by Rabbi Belsky, so we don't. And the hotels that are under the OU hashgacha, they don't allow quinoa. I was at a Malava Malka the other week. Rabosha Weiss was there from Yerushalayim. So someone asked him about quinoa. So he says, kidneys. One answer. Nothing to discuss. Kidneys. Didn't even give a pilpo.
He wasn't on the webcast, so he didn't give a pilpo.
So, Rabbi, what about cottonseed, Rabbi Schechter? Cottonseed oil? Somebody did ask the question.
Cottonseed oil, the Pashtus, is oil from Kitnius itself. Was always a dispute. And Rav Kook was famous. He gave a hashgacha on the oil, and the Batatz from Yerushalayim gave him a gahak the tzaris. And he said, based on all the earlier poskim, the shemen from the kidney should be muta. So that already became this kabbal that's asa. But nach ta'asa, oil from the cotton seed. So I saw the Minchas Yitzchok writes when he lived in England, in Manchester. So he writes that there's new shaila. He never saw it in any of the tshuvas. The Rav from Gateshead asked him the shaila, what should he do? So he builds up a whole argument, lahachmer, based on a chayyodam, that the chayyodam has a lotion, that cotton seed oil is muta bahano. So the Mashmoy says only muta bahano, but also bachila. Then in the later volume, he quotes those who say, I think he quotes from Meir Arik, who says, beferish, that it's muta bachila, but he still thinks maybe you should abstain. But here in America, the common practice is lahaka.
That's what, but the Pirsh Pesach Franks is the one who mentions that it's osir. That's the reason why in Eretz Yisrael they call it kidneys. A little surprising, but Rav Hirsch Pesach was a big poisey.
I remember when I was in high school, the Rebbe was telling us that he never heard that peanuts were considered kidneys till he was learning in the Beis Medrash in Shanghai. And the non-Jew who used to clean up the floor, used to wash the floor, started to scream, "Hummets, hummets." So they asked him, "Where's the hummets?" So he's pointing. They didn't know what he was pointing at. So he said, "Where's the hummets?" Kept on coming closer. They were eating the peanuts. Till he finally touched the peanut. And they said, "What hummets? When hummets?" They didn't know what he was talking. Said, "That's the first time they ever heard that there are people who abstain from eating peanuts on Pesach because it's kidneys." They heard of it in the Nochri in Shanghai.
50, 60 years ago, the most common oil used on Pesach was peanut oil.
Peanut oil.
Now today you won't find it anyways.
What about the restriction of kidneys for babies or Shechter? Is everything permitted? Should I try to minimize whatever possible?
For little babies who are lohigil lachinuch, so the Gemara learns out from a pasuk that it's osa lachila biadam. You're not allowed to give a little baby non-kosher food. So there is a famous dispute that's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. Does this only apply to a biblical prohibition of something mamish chazer? Or does it even apply to an issa derabbanan? So we are usually machmar on that, like the Rambam's opinion against the Rashba. Chacham Avad Yosef has a tshuva where he proves that even if you're machma like the Rambam, that's only if it's really an issa derabbanan. But if it's only asa mitam minig, so then even the Rambam would agree. Minig is lower level than a din derabbanan. The Pesachei Tshuva in Yerideh in Hilchas Nedarim quotes a very strange tshuvas Chasam Sofer, that even though the klal is that sofek derabbanan lekulam, but sofek minig is lechumah, because minig is mitam neder, and a neder is deraisa, so you have to be more machmer on a minig than on a din derabbanan. But this is in contradiction to many other tshuvas in the Chasam Sofer, where he says the way we usually assume, that a minig is a lower level than an issa derabbanan. That tshuva, he was probably attacking the Reform. The Reform were picking on all the menhagim, and once you do away with one minig, then everything is going to go away. So he wanted to be machmer on the minhagim. And the pashtus is, like Chacham Avadia said, that there's no isa lachir to be adayim on infants, so lo higir lachinuch, there's no isa on minhagim.
Rabelski, what are the halachas of kelim for someone who does not eat gebroks? Can they eat foods that are cooked in my pots, even though I do cook gebroks?
You know, these things depend a lot on to what extent the people who don't eat gebroks are noyik to be machmir. If their minig includes kelim, so then neinachonami, you have to kasher the kelim. And as far as I'm aware of, most of the people, at least recently, who don't eat gebroks, will consider the kelim also osir because. You know, it's why don't they eat gebroks? Because maybe there's some flour that wasn't mixed in with water and it never became baked and therefore it could turn to chametz. It's unbaked dough when water hits it, so it turns to chametz. So if that's what they're afraid of, so then. A kelim would also be osir. Well, I'm not an expert on what the menhagim of gebroks are for the people who don't use it, but I think, and I'm almost certain that almost everyone today, won't eat, won't use kelim from Gebrox.
On the list, they Pesach, they eat Gebrox, and then they assume that the kelim are with the next year because of Yud Beis Chodesh.
Yud Beis Chodesh, yeah.
But less than that, they're machmir.
Okay, this question expressed a certain anxiety on the part of the questionnaire of Belsky. She writes, I've been a vegetarian for many years. However, as I age, I've become lactose intolerant, and currently am being tested for sensitivity to gluten. Mm-hmm. Finding what to eat during Pesach is not easy. Is there such a thing as gluten-free matzah? What do I do about milk? I normally make my own almond milk or rice milk, and occasional purchase so delicious coconut milk. What can I use?
Almond milk has nothing to do with chametz or even kidneys, and it's a fruit from a tree, and no one ever was knowing that there should be any kind of iser. But almond milk and coconut milk the same way. It's the liquid found inside the coconut. It's the first idea that anyone would consider that may be a problem on Pesach. As far as rice milk, it's already a different story. Rice milk is not only easy, the kidney is. So for Bnei Ashkenaz who don't eat kidneys, rice is one, you know, on the first list of Devorah Masurim. On the other hand, Sfardim eat rice, and not all Sfardim. I was told many times the Moroccans don't eat rice, and the others do. But rice milk, the popular product, like rice dream, which many people who are sensitive to other things use it. It's a life staple. The rice dream is converted from the starch, pure starch in rice, into a sweet, water-soluble drink that's the dime to milk. They use four separate enzyme conversions, and two of them are made with chametz enzymes. One for sure, that without that there's no way to make rice cream. So I think that unless there's, you know, there's some medical problem, the person should consider rice cream, chametz, and check into any rice product, you know, that there may be an enzyme conversion from something that's chametz. In addition, rice in the United States is enriched. It's all enriched. And one of the enrichments contains live chametz. But my understanding from a big discussion we had last year is that the people who process the rice just skip one of the enrichments, and that's the one that contains the most chametz. That's vitamin B2. I learned something new last year. And finally, the government saw that they couldn't fight it, so they didn't require the enrichment of B2. But whatever it is, the other enrichments also contain a little bit of chametz, not as much. But B2 is pure chametz. And so rice is something to keep away from, and even Svardim, who eat rice on Pesach, should make sure to get the rice that's enrichment free, and there is stuff out there in the market which has a hashgacha for Pesach and is unenriched rice. But I don't know anything about other rice milk than the rice cream we have. Now, gluten free. If people are sensitive to gluten, would have to either try to get oat matzahs. There's almost no gluten in oats, and I think they could take oat matzahs. Oat matzahs are very difficult to eat for some people. It's unappetizing, but many, many people do use oat matzahs, especially, of course, those who are allergic to gluten, not just intolerant, but allergic to gluten. Their body could go haywire. And if a person can't do anything else, so he should eat the one kezias of matzah, and each night, no five kezaisim like we all try to eat during the Seder, and that's it. But a person shouldn't play games with allergies. If sometimes these allergies could induce violent reactions, should be done with advice from a capable common doctor who knows these things and who's the Yir Shamayim as well. And that's as much as I could say about this question.
If the person only eats the one kezias of matzah, that should be at the end of the meal. He should eat the soup and the right. flesh and everything, mm-hmm. the fish, at the last, and he should wash at the end of the meal.
Right. That's what I have a cousin who's been doing that for many years, and he eats that one kezias, and nothing happens to him. But if he starts seeing more, the reaction starts setting in.
This would be a good point to mention that this year the OU innovated, as it always does, this year in introducing an OU kidney symbol for Acheinu the Sfardim, something that has been very, very positively accepted in the community and much spoken about. Certainly in years to come, the OU will increase the number of products that will be available with the OU kidney symbol. Finally, in this area of halacha, Rav Belsky, someone asked to discuss the hidu, or the minhag of peeling vegetables. Is this a credible minhag? Is this have to do with something that there's no beetle on Pesach?
You know, if you suspect that outside on the peel of the vegetable there could be a few flakes or drops of actual chametz, then it's a major problem because you're being mevatel that mashu of chametz into the vegetable. In Europe, there were people who peeled everything because, you know, the distributors of vegetables and the stores sold their vegetables out in the open. There were no closed packages. They weren't washed. And there's stuff all over them, and they were very nervous about the possibility of a mashu chametz getting onto the vegetables. There are people who do it today as well. If that's what they do, then you know, there are many minhagim which were done for very reasonable and important purposes over the years. But then again, circumstances changed. And yet the people are still mekayim the minhagim. Agam, and the Rama says in Shulchan Aruch, for instance, Siman Tav Samach Zayin, that you're not supposed to eat dried fruits unless there's a hashgacha. Other people say we have a meaning not to eat dried fruits even if there is a hashgacha. So I guess it's a little bit more than the Rama says. But if that's considered a family minhag to peel the vegetables, so that's it.
And tov aleihem bracha.
Tov aleihem bracha. I tell you, there's one thing I have to say. You see, people have minhagim on top of minhagim to be machmir all over the place on Pesach. But there are two reasons why, you know, these things happen. One is that a minhag that lasts for a chumrah that lasts for 8 days, it doesn't really bother anyone. After a week, they go right back to where everything was before. And another thing is that we do things for Zeicher Letzias Mitzrayim on Pesach especially. Everything is Zeicher Letzias Mitzrayim. And if we're reminding ourselves of the minhagim that our grandfathers did for important reasons, and we don't have those reasons, it's some kind of zecher for the old world as well, to remember the way it was. There's a book, it's called The Way It Was. I'm sure that some of these things are in that book.
Rav Belsky, Baruch Hashem, many, many Jews out there are listening to the insights and the psokim that you and Rav Schechter are issuing. So somebody just sent me an email regarding what you said on Rise Dream, should one sell Reisedream instead of putting away his kidneys?
I think so. I mean, self-consult, there probably is, there's not a shear, there's no tziruf, because it can't get together in one kli, and it's a liquid, it's always kept inside a kli. So there are reasons, but self-consult, we try to sell teruvus chametz, even in a case where there's really no need to sell it. It's teruvus chametz, so it's included in the stuff that people sell.
And what you said about minhagim, somebody sent another email just now. What's the story with garlic? Why did people not use garlic before, and it's still prevalent today?
I could share these answers with Rav Shechter. You know, the garlic is one of many, many things which are, for some reason, way back when, they peeled the garlic or something, there was a chash of chametz on garlic. It's no longer the case, and you could go into any fruit store and buy garlic. Just you have the plain old garlic that comes out of the ground the way it is. You take it apart, peel it, and it's unthinkable that there should be anything with the garlic. But at some time in history, there were problems with garlic, and it's included in the list of things that I mentioned earlier. There's some people don't eat any fish. And I was told that in Europe it was hard to get fish. And the fish that, the inland fish that swam in lakes, a carp is one of the most popular Jewish fish. And it kept fresh because it stays alive in a package of straw with, they would put sometimes a clod of cotton, which they soaked in alcohol in the mouth of the carp, and that kept the carp alive. So it was still fresh, it didn't start spoiling. They had to ship it in inland, you know, by horse and buggy, and it could take a long, long time to get to its destination. And of course, many people were upset about it, because if the fish died along the way, and maybe it could still be eaten, but it might have had chametz from the alcohol. They put a little schnapps in the And many people know that today there's no such thing. And yet, you know, it's one of the things that were done all the way back, and people tell you, in our family, we don't eat garlic, we don't eat fish, we don't eat carp, this and that, all kinds of different things. Look, it sometimes adds to the color and to the excitement and to the memories and to of Pesach, so there's nothing wrong. There's something else to be said about this. You know, when I was a youngster, there were no manufactured products for Pesach. Before Pesach, we sat down and squeezed out as many lemons as we could. And we had to get milk before Pesach, because the farms were all feeding the animals chametz. And by the end of Pesach, half the milk spoiled, no matter how good the old refrigerators were. And nobody had it. Everybody had to grind, you know, anything they had by hand. There were no machines. It's totally different now. There's a million products, and you could sit in the Biazoyle Vesoyvi from the beginning of Pesach to the end and gain 15 pounds just from eating all the delicacies that are out there in the market. So you could keep all the old menhagim, and you'll still have oinig yontif to the, you know, coming out of your nose. You know, I'm not worried about people who don't do this and that. When Gebrox first became a minig, the Chacham Tzvi was fire. He said, you're robbing people of the single oinig yontif that anybody had on Pesach, taking away from them the ability to eat knedel. That was the Pesach staple. What else was there for Pesach? Baruch Hashem, today you walk into a store, the Pesach department is from floor to ceiling, lined with all different kinds of chocolates, and you could even have pizza that's kosher to Pesach, made from potato starch, or maybe from quinoa, I don't know.
Oh, you certified. Rabbi, I will turn to some Yontif Shilas. Yeah. Rav Shechter, is it permissible to invite a not yet Shomer Shabbos guest to the Pesach Seder if they would drive on Yontif? If they should bring a non-Jewish friend along, is there an issue with teaching Torah in the presence of a non-Jew? How about food preparation for a non-Jewish guest?
The Gemara has a gzeira midrabbanon that you're not permitted to invite a nochri to eat by you on Yontif. On Shabbos you're permitted to, because on Shabbos we don't even cook for Bnei Yisrael. But on Yontif, where we do malachas, or echal nefesh, and the Gemara learns that from the pasuk, hulabada yasa lachem, lachem ulo the nochrim, so you're not permitted to cook for a nochri. So the Gemara made a gzeira midrabbanon, you shouldn't invite emes amem san nochri by Yontif, gzeira shemiyarbe bishvili. He may cook for the nochri. The Magen Avraham quotes a machloikas achrayim. What if you have a Yisrael who's dinig in ochri? Yisrael who's machal Shabbos beferhesia, or one who violates rov dinah haTorah, so it's dinig in ochri. So if you don't say dinig in ochri l'chol davar, you can't sell your chometz to the Yisrael who's a meshumid. He can't shave his payas with a razor. It's not 100%. You can't use him as a Shabbos guy. He's a Yisrael. With respect to certain dinim, is dinik enochi. So the Magen Avraham has a machlokes. Would you say that this gzeira de rabbanon, emizamen besan nochri, even applies to a Yisrael who's dinik enochi? The Mishnah Brura machzach nishvisendik that there's a machlokes. Mishnah Brura writes that it's also to invite the Yisrael who's dinik enochi, and in the footnotes in the Sharatzian he writes pashut. Instead of, he's covering up, instead of saying it's a machlekes achrayim, machlekes achrayim, if you're allowed to cook for him. So he says dina kenachrei and also lezamnai. That's really questionable. Anyway, let's say we have a person who's not yet shomer Shabbos, not yet a shomer Shabbos. Hard to say. Sometimes you can say dina kenachrei, sometimes not. Very often the Chazon Ish and earlier Poskim, the Binyan Sion, many Poskim said that today, that so many Jews are not observant. It's hard to say that he's Dinuk and Nochri because Machal Shabbos Befehesi. Befehesi means not only Bemezid, means that he's breaking the discipline. Everybody else in the community is observing Shabbos and he's not. So that is hard to say today, that a Jew who's not a Shem Shabbos is Dinuk and Nochri. You have another din that the one who violates Rov Dini HaTorah is also Dini Kenorchi, that you can have. It's also, that's only Bemezid, the dinim that he's aware of. A lot of times people only know three dinim. They know you got to say Yiska, and you got to say Kaddish, and you have to keep kosher. And the two out of the three they observe. They say the Yiska, and they say the Kaddish, and the kosher, that they're Mezalzalan. So they think that they're observing, and they have to march in the Israeli parade. So they do three out of four. They don't know that there are 613 mitzvahs. So it's hard to say that you shouldn't invite a Yisrael who's dina kenochri today. Even the Mishnah Brura is a shver Mishnah Brura. Even if you say that his dina kenochri, you're not allowed to cook for him. So that you have the gzeira also, you're not allowed to invite him. That's a shver chumra. If he wants to come with a nochri, so that's already a problem. The Gemara says you're not permitted to invite a nochri. Gzeira shemiyarbe b'shvilo. Dayan Grosnas, he used to be a dayan in London. So he has in his tshuvas, if you feel compelled in a situation that you have to invite a nochri to eat by you on Yontif, so you should have all the food in the kitchen should be taken care of by a non-Jewish help. So even if the nochri will ask for something, there's no gzeira shemiyarbe b'shvilo, because the Jews are not doing any cooking. The nochrim are doing all the cooking in the kitchen. And that's on every Yontif. We say gzeira shemiyarbe b'shvilo. Many have an attitude then on Pesach night to the Seder, there's a special inyan that it says in Chumash Kol Benecha Lo Yochal Bay, that you're not allowed to have a nochri participate in the Korban Pesach. So many feel that you should treat the Seder like the Seder when we had the Korban Pesach. You shouldn't have nochrim by the Seder. All right, that's Sanu Minig. But the Medina de Gemara says you shouldn't invite a nochri on the Yontif. If the nochri walks in, you don't have to throw him out. Gemara says, if the Nachri walks in uninvited, so in the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Gemara, you have to tell them straight out, it's our holiday, we're only permitted to cook for those who observe the Yontif. For those who are not Jewish, we're not allowed to cook, so you can eat what's on the table, but you can't ask for anything extra. As far as teaching Torah to the Nachrim, this is also a problem, this is also an issue. So many assume, the Sridi Eish has a tshuva about this, many assume that Torah Shebichsav is mutter to teach to the Nochrim, only Torah Shebalpeh is awesome. So in the Haggadah, we read psukim. Arami Avirabi, we read the psukim, and then we give the whole drushas of the Torah Shabbal Peh. We give the commentary of the Torah Shabbal Peh. So there is a problem that you're giving, teaching Torah Shabbal Peh to the Nachrim. It is a bit of a, I don't know how much the Nachrim will appreciate that he's hearing Torah Shabbal Peh, he's hearing a commentary on the psukim. I don't know, usually you quote other psukim, say other psukim are beferish psukim, just that the Torah Shabbal Peh says that that's what this pasuk means. So the Nachri really appreciates that that's a drush of the Torah Shabbal Peh on this pasuk. I don't know. If you'll tell over dinim of the Torah Shabbal Peh to the Nachri, that's an issue.
Is the issue that the Nachri will be able to discern what's Torah Shabbal Peh, or is the issue that I am not allowed to convey Torah Shabbal Peh to him, even if he doesn't discern that it is?
No, you shouldn't convey Torah Shabbal Peh, but most of the Haggadah you quote psukim. So everything is psukim. So does the Nachri really appreciate that this is a commentary on the other pasuk? I think most of the Israelim don't realize that this is a. The Mishnah says you recite Arami Avidavi Vidorsha. You give the drushes of the Torah Shabbal Peh, analyzing each phrase separately. I think most of the Israelim who listen to the Haggadah don't realize that we're giving Torah Shabbal Peh. They just feel as if we're ongevorfen asach psukim. We quote a lot of psukim. So it's basically you're saying Torah Shabbichzav.
I earlier welcomed our many, many listeners. Throughout the country, as well as today in Eretz Yisrael, the Arutz Sheva is having the webcast live throughout Eretz Yisrael. We're thrilled about that. And I also want to welcome two very distinguished guests in person who are here in the room on the 14th floor of the world headquarters of the OU, Rabbi Menachem Ganak, the CEO of OU Kosher. We're forever grateful to him for all that he does and leads us to do at OU Kosher, and Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Weinrib, the Executive Vice President Emeritus of the OU, a dear friend and one of the distinguished spokespersons for the OU throughout the world. Rav Schechter, back to going away for Pesach this time. We're going away to our parents for Pesach. We're leaving Erev Pesach, not coming back until after Pesach is over. What do I need to do to clean? Is it sufficient to clean one room and do bedika for the rest of the house? How should we deport ourselves?
The pashtus is a person has a whole apartment with 15 rooms, so you should be by the chametz on all the 15 rooms. It doesn't have to take hours and hours and hours. It should take a few minutes in every room. Mok m'shem achnis by chametz, room where you never bring any chametz, so you don't have to be by the chametz. If you have little children who shlek chametz all over, so you have to be by the chametz. It's not right that people only, they rent out the whole apartment on Yud Gimel, so Leil Yud Dalet, they only have one room that wasn't rented to the Nachri, then the Yotze the Bedika on that one room. I remember quite a few years ago, I live in Washington Heights, a lot of the young couples were all going away to their parents, and they did this stunt, they rented out the whole apartment to the Nachri, and they only did Bedikas Chamas in one room, and they didn't prepare any food for Pesach. Then there was a snowstorm and Erev Pesach in the morning, and everyone was stuck in Washington Heights, and they had a ask Rachmanis that people should invite them over for the Siddharma for Pesach. They had nothing prepared. And then they had to be Bodik Chametz in the daytime. It's not right. You have a mitzvah B'dikas Chametz, so you should be Bodik all the rooms. If you plan to stay in the apartment, then we go crazy. Then you scrape the walls down. Then you scrape the tables. Then you do everything. If you're not going to be in the apartment, you just do normal B'dikas Chametz. But the Pashto said you should do a regular B'dikas Chametz.
Somebody just sent a follow-up email about what was said earlier, Rav Schechter, on the Jews, non-Jews, etc., inviting them, teaching them. What about people who are really not Jewish but are in the process of conversion?
Same as a non-Jew. Same as a non-Jew. Gzeir Hashem Yarbe Bishvili. You're not permitted to invite them to the Yontev Tani meal. Gzeir Hashem Yarbe Bishvili.
Though there are many who would like to invite these not only prospective Gerim but almost Gerim to experience a Seder experience.
So you have to tell them in advance. We can't give you any food. You can come and watch, but you have to bring your own food. We can't give you food.
Bring a korech with you.
Okay.
You could invite him for a Shabbos also, because there's no Gzeir Shem Yarim B'Shvila. Many people are interested in becoming Yidden.
Ravelsky, is it permissible for a Jew who works for a non-Jewish company to organize during Chol HaMoed a company lunch or event which will serve Chametz on Pesach?
You know, it's a person who's doing that is doing a number of things that are wrong. Number one, there's a special halacha that's not discussed frequently enough, and that is that if a person is roitze b'kiyumoy, if he needs chometz, if not, he'll have a hefsed on Pesach. For instance, if I lent a pot of mine to a goy who's going to cook chometz stick of food in it, and if that the food would be spilled into the garbage can and the flame would continue burning, so the pot would crack, it would get ruined. So I need the chometz in that pot, which is the goy's chometz, and I'd lend the pot to him, and that's still called like it's roitze b'kiyumoy. I want the chometz to be around. So kol shken, if I'm organizing a party and they're serving chometz, and the party wouldn't be able to take place and wouldn't be the same and wouldn't be successful without the chometz that's being served. So I'm definitely having hanoah and I'm being roitze b'kiyumoy chometz. And there could be a number of different scenarios with roitze b'kiyumoy. That's one reason why someone should keep away from this kind of thing. It's simply because it may be that it's also roitze b'kiyumoy is most likely, there are different hesberim, but most likely that it's having hanoah from chometz because of the existence of the chometz. If the chometz would disappear, my pot would get ruined. So the chometz is preventing a hefsed from me, so I want the chometz to continue to be inside the pot while the flame is under it, and all the other situations of roitze b'kiyumoy. But there's something more than that. If I'm doing a job, and that's my parnasa, working with chometz and having setting up parties, eating chometz. It's much more than a casual observer, a mashkiach who wants to pop in on an OU company or any other company that has hashkocha. Of course, he could just stick in his face on Pesach to make sure that they're not doing anything treif. They're not being machal yisurim. He doesn't need the chometz, and if the chometz would all disappear, it wouldn't bother him. He'll still get paid from the hashkocha agency. But he's just looking at it. Over here, it's much different. I'm doing my job with the chometz, and I'm working with chometz. It's the thing that a person should absolutely not do. And I could throw into the pot another ingredient. If he could take his days off on Chol HaMoed, he would be doing a very, very big mitzvah. Or Hashem, there are lots and lots of Yidden who don't work on Chol HaMoed in recent times, and they still survive. It's not, Enloi Ma Yoichal, which is one of the Eterim on Chol HaMoed. With a little preparation, it could be done. But let's put that aside. The person shouldn't be misasik with chometz in a way that accomplishes a purpose for himself, for his company, for others that appreciate it. He should find someone else who could take over that part of the company's work, and definitely not do it on Pesach. I just want to ditto just one remark that Rav Schechter said about people who are not frum, but they're not they're dinoy kenachri because they're trying to become frum. And it's hard to say that a person who's interested in Yiddishkeit and he never knew anything before, even when he'll become frum, and he could become a Talmud Chacham, he could make his whole family frum, and the beautiful results that happen sometimes that we hear about, Baruch Hashem. If a person does that, he's not a Baal Tshuva. He didn't do Tshuva from anything. He was born and brought up not knowing that any of these things are even a problem, and not even calling them an Aveira. And you're being Makar of him and teaching him. So if he comes to the Seder to learn, he's at least as important to the Seder as the Tam and the person who is good kashrus, and because of the tritzim you give him, he'll get closer and closer to Yishkeit.
Part of the shaila was if he's going to drive on Yontif. We didn't address that. What if you know he's going to drive on Yontif? Chacham Avad Yosef has an interesting tshuva.
Baruch Shekivanta, because somebody just sent an email a minute ago as a follow-up to what you said, Rosh Hechter. What is the proper way to invite a Jew to the Seder who will not stay for all of Yontif and leave in a car after the Suda? And then he writes, or should one not invite them?
So Chacham Abadia has an interesting tshuva. He writes that driving an automobile on Shabbos, he feels, is a prohibition men haTorah. Havara, you're burning the gis. But he says on Yontif, he thinks that it's a tzarech hayang tzas. He want to get somewhere. So he thinks that driving an automobile on Yontif is only an issa derabbanan. If I'm not going to invite this fellow over, Mistamah will be turning on the lights and turning off the lights and eating chometz and eating treifas. He'll probably be violating many more averes. If I invite such a person over on Yontif, he's doing an Issa Derabbanan, driving there, driving back, but for a couple of hours he'll be by B's. So the end result will be that he'll be doing fewer averes then if he doesn't come to me.
To make it a drop better, which is what you said is the basic, so he'll be here, it would not hurt to offer him a place to stay. If you decide to stay, we'll find you a very comfortable place. You don't have to go. Even if it's almost certain that he'll
turn it down,
but I hope we can. The offer is still there.
I don't think since we've begun our webcast a few years ago, I've received so many emails during the webcast itself as a follow-up. But just to be fair to those that sent in questions last week and the week before, we'll take more of these and then perhaps come back to the others that are being asked as we go along. Regarding the Seder, what part of the Haggadah is a woman obligated to listen to a Shechter? What if she needs to step out to tend to her baby, etc.?
The women are obligated to the same extent as the men. Look, Chadgad Yenechad Miyodeya is not part of the Seder, and Dayenu also is not really part of the Seder. That's added on, Piyutim are added on. But the main parts of the Seder, the Arami Avirovi with the commentary and all the psukim and then the Hallel before and after, the women are just as obligated as the men. They should say everything. They have to step out to take care of the children, the babies or whatever. So if it's not going to be too long a pause, so the rest of the people should wait for 5-10 minutes till she comes back. Aznit. So they have to, if you have a lot of people at the Seder, you can't keep on pausing every time someone's going to leave. So you tell the woman when she comes back, she should catch up. She should say the rest on her own. L'chatchil, it's preferable to fulfill Sipi Tzis Mitzrayim by telling it over to others. But even if a person is all by himself, he also fulfills Sipi Tzis Mitzrayim by saying over the story to himself.
This question here could be a whole Shabbos Agodal Drosha, Rebelsky, but the person, I guess, wants to know, L'maisa, is boxed machine shmura matzah is acceptable for the Seder as hand matzahs?
You know, shmura matzah, machine matzah rather, I'm sorry, machine matzah was considered by many, many tzaddikim and Gedol Yisrael and Rabbonim and Chachomim as being superior to hand matzah. I'm sure that most people listening know that in Yerushalayim, the old community of Yerushalayim, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld and all the famous tzaddikim who used to live there, there were books written about them, beautiful stories told about them. Among them were Chassidim and Litvish and Sephardim and Ashkenazim of all types and all origins. And it was a holy city, and so on and so forth, and they all ate machine matzah on Pesach. So to say that eating machine matzah is like lowering one's dargin in Yiddishkeit, when Rav Sholem Shvadron, the famous Yerushalayim Maggid, was in a certain city where most of the people came from, I guess, Polish. And they didn't eat machine matzah, and they looked on machine matzah as being chametz gomer, so he didn't have a place which would invite him for Seder. At 10 o'clock, he was walking with a a box of his Yerushalayim machine matzahs and pacing the streets until finally someone had rachmanis and allowed him to come in, provided he sat at a separate table and covered by a paper, and carried it out to the garbage the second he finished, so that he shouldn't taint the holiness of the house. As far as the lishma of machine matzahs, there were people who said that the kizayis of hand matzah should be eaten because it may not be considered lishma. Others consider it lishma. Why? Because they put it into the machine, you'd put it in, and but the machine is the only device that could make could make matzah that you're not masich das from, then there's no hefsik in the asik of the matzah even for a second. But we're not going to sit here on a webcast and solve all the world's problems. Everybody will be doing this Pesach what he's always been doing, and nobody's going to change the way they do things. And people who eat hand matzah will eat hand matzah, people who eat machine matzah will eat machine matzah, people who eat kibrox will eat kibrox, and those who don't eat kibrox won't eat kibrox. There's nothing.
Maybe the fellow who asked the question is making the Seder for the first time, so he wants to set a pace. Robelsky, two questions regarding coffee machines. Can I use the same Mr. Coffee machine during Pesach today if I buy a new glass container? And secondly, in regard to the Keurig coffee makers, do they need to be kashered for Pesach?
I've been told that some of the Keurig has chometz. I haven't seen them. You have a list of... Yeah. But I think somewhere in the OU there's a little short list of different kinds, different flavors that may have some chometz in it. So if that's the case, then and you probably could by letting just plain boiling water go through the machine a couple of times, you'll probably cover every spot with boiling hot water. You don't need libun, that's for sure. So you just cash it out. And chometz tikka kelim, with the most important kelim to be kashered, because hilchas hagolos kelim are in hilchas pesach, and they're not even found in your day, most of them. And so if a person just has plain coffee or unflavored coffee and he used the machine with it, then there's nothing to talk about. But if the coffee's had questionable flavors, so get a new glass container or something that if there's a chashash chometz, maybe there's someone who knows much more about it than I do. Do you have an idea what
website, we have a list of the kosher Pesach flavors and ones that aren't.
Yeah.
On the OU website, they have a list of which of the Keurig flavors are kosher Pesach and which ones are not. If they have used any of the ones which were not kosher Pesach, then they should kasher it too. The inside of the machine itself is just water, but then once it pierces the cup and the there's like a holder that that the coffee drips through, that you can actually snap that out and you can kasher it in boiling water.
Let boiling water flow through?
Yeah.
Now, what about the first question on the Mr. Coffee? If I have a new glass container for Pesach, is that okay?
So somebody else will have to answer that, because I don't even know what a Mr. Coffee machine.
Again, if they use just plain regular coffee in the machine, then regular unflavored coffee is kosher Pesach year-round. If they put flavored coffees in there, then they'd have to kasher now the inside of the machine too. But otherwise, the carafe, the glass, we don't kasher glass or Pesach. Probably they rinsed it out in their sink together with chametz tikka things, so it should be replaced. But the inside, if they only used unflavored coffee, then it wouldn't be a shaila on the inside.
I just want to make mention of the fact that many questions regarding koshering were extensively covered in past webcasts, and all of the past Pesach webcasts, as well as all of the other OU Kosher webcasts, are archived and posted on the OU Kosher website for your enlightenment and enhancement. Regarding koshering of Shechter, does a countertop made of quartz need to be covered for Pesach? What if it has developed some small nicks? Is it still permissible to kosher it, or is it possible to kosher it?
We assume that even stone is also boleya, whatever the countertop is. If you think that there's a possibility that you may, in the course of the year you put some hot chametz on it, so then it could be boleya the chametz. It should either be covered or kashered, one or the other. Yeah, even if it doesn't have any nicks.
I received some large all-steel pots which are too awkward to kosher by boiling. Can I kosher them in the oven, Rav Shechter?
In Shulchan Aruch, we assume that whenever a kli could be kashered by doing hagola, by putting it into burning hot water, so you can replace that form of kashering with libun kal. Means if you put it, let's say you put the gigantic pot in an oven, and the oven always goes up to 550 degrees in normal ovens in America, so if you leave the pots in the oven for a while, that's considered libun kal, and that will substitute for the need for hagola. You can do libun kal, yeah.
Rabelsky, we have a granite countertop and stainless steel sinks in our kitchen. In the past, we poured boiling water over them to kosher. However, this is a messy job. There is a handheld steamer on the market. Would that be acceptable for koshering the above items?
The steamers that are used by the professional kasherers, who mashkichim, who are experts in kashering, they issue from the end of the steamer boiling hot steam, which means steam that's under pressure and that would burn your hand if you come near it. That is surely good for certain types of kashering. If you need hagola and you keep it there for a little while, it'll be magil and keep boiling water around the whole thing. But the home steamers, Obederch Klau, just light steam, they hardly have any heat, they condense immediately and turn to water. The steam has to be hot in order to have boiled.
But what temperature does it need to be at to be able to be used?
It's not the temperature. There's small amounts of heat in the tip of these. There's very, very little water. You know, when something boils, a little bit of steam, and it loses all that heat within seconds. It's not going to kosher anything.
Okay, and also relating to koshering, Ravelsky, somebody just asked, my kitchen counters are made of granite. Mm-hmm. Is koshering permissible? I think that was also asked.
Exactly the same thing as Rav Shechter said before. Granite is a form of stone, and you have to kosher it. And we know in Shulchan Aruch that the Achronim afterwards stressed very much that you should kosher countertops where you might put food down, and they're like shulchanos, and you should use irui and other pour boiling water all over it. And here it says that they found this to be a mess, and that's not enough. It has to have irui pleirishin, boiling water poured on it, plus an Evan Melubenis. An Evan Melubenis is a stone that's been heated by the fire to add a little heat to the water that's coming down onto the countertop. For restaurants and other such places, they really go to work and to kasher with Iri and an Evan Lubenis. That's the way it's done. They can't have a special set of countertops for the heavy work that's being done, especially hotels. So they have to kasher it with an Iri and Evan Lubenis. In the home, the best way of kashering such a thing, unless you find it convenient and you're experienced, So you could do it do like everyone else, pour boiling water or something on it. But the main thing is just to cover it with, you know, like everybody does, with cardboard, with heavy aluminum foil, whatever people do to their countertops. If they want to have a beautiful countertop with it, so they have to go to the length and to the toil and trouble and messiness of kashering it the way they're supposed to.
Okay, Rav Shechter, I recently purchased a new set of oven racks so that I would have a new set of oven racks, especially for Pesach. They came with a note that said that the racks are lubricated porcelain enamel oven racks, which can remain in the oven during the self-clean cycle. Do not clean this vegetable oil lubrication off the racks. Can I use these racks?
I think we should try to find out whether the vegetable oil that they smeared on the outside is kosher or not. And maybe treif. We should find out what the ingredients are.
So before the question of koshering is a question on the use of the vegetable oil itself that's been smeared on.
Yeah.
Okay. What do the poskim hold, Rav Shechter, regarding prescription medications for Pesach? And what about vitamins?
The klal is that chometz that's not roi l'achilas hakelev before Pesach begins. If it's nefs m'achilas hakelev before Pesach, then the Gemara says it's muta b'hano on Pesach. There's a machloikis, and we pass in the Shulchan Aruch that it's also b'achila mid'rabbanim because of achshavei. If I sit and I eat it, so I demonstrate that as far as I'm concerned, it is roi l'achilas. So many of the recent poskim say that if a person pops a pill in his mouth, that's nifsan machilas akel, all the pills, unless they put the flavoring in it. But prescription medication that doesn't have flavoring in it, all the pills are nifsan machilas akel. So if a person pops it into his mouth and he swallows, he's not really demonstrating that as far as he's concerned, achshavei, it's still rael achila. He's doing it l'shem refuah. It doesn't show it. People rub things on their skin l'shem refuah. They do all kinds of crazy things. So because he's popping a pill in his mouth, it doesn't demonstrate that he holds that it's rael achila. So the pashta says that all of this is muta. I remember once when we had a little baby, so we had to go to the doctor before Pesach. One of the babies was sick. So the doctor prescribed some kind of medication. So as I was about to leave, so the doctor says, "Oh, Rabbi, I see that you are a real Torah scholar, that the parents who were there before us, also they had a baby, and he gave a prescription, and the father asked, it was right before Pesach, he asked, is it kosher the Pesach?" So he said, he doesn't understand. All of these prescriptions have yeast in them. All the yeast is chametzdik. Everything is chametzdik, but the baby needs it, so it's mutter. The yeast is not chametz. Yeast, if you have yeast growing, microorganisms are not chametzdik. If you have microorganisms growing in dough, that's chametz, that's sour. But just yeast per se is not, Fleischmann's dry yeast is not chametz. If you put the yeast into dough and you help it rise, that's chametz.
The wet yeast all has cereal base. The wet, the blocks of yeast.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But the dry yeast doesn't, yeah.
The vitamins abipashtas are the same thing. If they're flavored, you have to make sure that the flavors are not treif, that the flavors are not chametzdik. But if the vitamins are not flavored, just swallow the pills. So all the pills are nifs machila before Pesach. There's machila, there's no achshavei.
Rav Belsky, why does the OU hold that you don't need a hechsher on paper on paper cupcake holders and other paper products for Pesach if starch is used in the process?
First of all, in cupcake holders, there's no starch ever used in the process. There's no such thing. But there is soft, thicker paper, like hand towels made of paper, that has sizing in the mills where they make the, you know, they grind up the wood and make paper. The big giant paper mills, so they add a little thickener, they use it as sizing to give that softness to the paper and the absorbency. we found, number one, that it's at most a cornstarch. They never put in wheat starch or any other kind of starch that may be chametz. But even that, even if it were wheat starch, where there's none, or even if you're afraid of a mashu of kidneys coming out of the paper, that stuff never comes out of the paper. I mean, you could use the chemical tests and you wouldn't find any starch coming out of the paper. And, you know, people who try to make somewhat of a measurement and find that if there's one tiny drop of kidneys that popped out of a lamp that's lit, like in the old days when they had oil lamps on the tables, not today we have electric lights and candles, but in the Amalekite site there were oil lamps that lit up the whole house, not just lights for lichtbench, and they were sometimes made from shemen shel kidneys. That's where the Yevosh says that shemen shel kidneys is also, but he says if it'll, some drops of oil will pop into your food, it's mutter 100%, and you don't have to be careful to see to it that the oil of the kidneys doesn't pop into the food. It's bottled no matter what. And if somebody would go to the pains of measuring all the possible starch that leaks out from paper into all his foods during a lifetime, I think that it wouldn't be equal to two drops of oil that could possibly, you know, pop out of an oil lamp into his food. It's the amount is less than insignificant. Yeah, so that's why there's no problem with these paper products that we know of. The only someone came up with a problem, and he said that there's glue that holds on the first piece onto the cardboard tube that the paper is rolled onto, and that little drop of glue is maybe wheat-based glue. So when you come to the last piece of paper, so
don't use it.
Don't use it.
Along the same lines, Rav Shechter, someone asked, been discussed in other forums of the OU. I recently heard that the disposable styrofoam cups commonly used for hot drinks are manufactured in a mold that is smeared with a grease to enable it to be expelled from the mold easily. Could this be a problem with kashrus if it is used cold or hot? I think he's asking not only regarding Pesach.
It is an issue. They mix in a non-kosher ingredient, but it's so insignificant an amount that whatever, even if you have a third of a cup of cold or warm drink, it's going to be bottled by Elif. You're going to have shishim against it. It's not roi lachila to begin with. When they put it in to mix it with the beads that they make these styrofoam cups with, it wasn't roi lachila to begin with. So the pashtus is that it starts off as an unkosher ingredient, but then it's mutta.
Is one permitted to use dish soap without an OUP?
The pashtus says that soap is not roi lachila. Not roi lachila sakelev. Mutta.
Ravelsky, you mentioned before about dried fruit. Does dried fruit need an OUP?
Yeah, the Amo says that we only eat dried fruit with a hechsher. So why not be Mekayim that there's plenty of it to go around? Unless you live out in some part of the world where there's no hechsher on dried fruit.
Someone who had just arrived to this country sent us a whole bunch of shilas just to familiarize himself with the way we do things here in America for Pesach. So he asks, among other things, is any oil besides cottonseed with Pesach Hechsher and olive oil, I should say extra virgin olive oil, kosher for Pesach? Specifically, he wants to know if he can use certified grape seed and coconut oil, or can he use it without Pesach certification?
Oh,
Kravelsky, yeah.
Oh. Grapeseed oil has no shaychus to chametz in any which way. It has to be manufactured with some kind of hechsher, because who knows about the the grape, and other juice that might get into the pits. But they don't come in, and the oil is made by crushing the seeds of grapes after the wine is all crushed out of them. And it's done in a way that doesn't create a shiloh for Isser. But, you know, like try to get grape seed oil with a hechsher for Pesach. It's available. And what other kind of oil?
Coconut oil.
Coconut oil is no problem at all. And I don't think they manufacture coconut oil in the same machinery as any other, because coconut oil is solid at room temperature, and they have their own devices for getting out coconut oil. And if a person is really troubled by all this, so let him use the oil and fat that his great-grandmother used during Pesach, going back 100 generations, which was chicken schmaltz. Isn't that what they always used to use?
That was before they discovered cholesterol.
Cholesterol, yeah.
Rav Shachter, going back to something we spoke about earlier, there was a follow-up question that came in. We have a house in the Catskills. We will not be there during Pesach. Do we have to send someone there to be by the chametz?
If the person doesn't know whether there's chametz or not, then he left the Catskills before Purim, before 30 days before Pesach, then he's not obligated to be by the chametz. If he knows for sure that he has chametz, so he should really do something about it. He should sell a chametz. Okay.
Sell it, but he doesn't have to go back.
I don't think so. Well, if you leave before 30 days before Pesach.
Unless
you plan to come
unless
back.
Unless he has chickens that are pecking away over there, and it's more birds that made it up. And the chotzer, yeah, whatever.
Why are some raw meats, especially ground, not always kosher for Pesach? Or is that true, Rav Shechter?
I think we're concerned that maybe the machine that you did the grinding on may have been used for chametz, or the person who's doing the grinding in the butcher shop may be munching on a sandwich as he's grinding the meat. So we're always concerned that there may be the same as the dried out fruits. We're always afraid that maybe they dried out their fruits on chametz dike kelim that were previously used for chametz. You always have to make sure that there's no chametz mixed in.
Rav Gerstin, am I correct that in the OU Kosher Pesach guide, there's a whole article, and there's also a listing. You want to mention that?
In this year's OU Pesach directory, so there's a whole article written by Rabbi Klarberg. It goes through all the different OU kosher meats, all the different companies, which ones are always kosher for Pesach, even if it doesn't say specifically that it's kosher for Pesach. You know, which ones are not. It's an extensive list. It's also available at on the OU website.
I would mention that for the past 2-3 weeks, on the average, there are about 10 calls every hour that I get. I guess others get many, many more about the OU Pesach guide. Please be aware that on the homepage of www.ou.org, you can download the Pesach guide. You can download the Pesach guide on the homepage of the OU website. And there you'll have extensive information, both factual as well as elaborative, on all aspects of Pesach. If I do not sell chametz gomur before Pesach, how do I determine which products have chametz in them? Must we get rid of things like ketchup, mustard that contain unspecified vinegar? Do we assume that this vinegar is made from grain, Rav Belsky?
You hit the nail on the head. These foods have vinegar. You know, ketchup definitely has, and there's a little in mustard sometimes. And if it's made outside the U.S., so the source of the vinegar is very likely to be from chametz. If it's made in the U.S., it's from cornstarch and other such things. It's a food that should have a hechsher for Pesach. Nobody ever takes, and in mustard, of course, is a problem all on its own. Mustard, in Shulchan Aruch says that mustard is kidney. That's one of the things that is written beferish. Come out the only thing practically.
But they're asking whether or not they need to sell these if they don't sell chametz gomer.
No. It's a terrifus of a small amount of chametz that's only mitzad the chomer of Pesach that will chashish for it. So that
chametz gomer means it's more than 50% of the product is chametz. Here it's less than 50%. Chametz gomer is cookies and spaghetti and cakes and breads.
Pasta?
Everybody's
macaroni?
Macaroni, yeah. That's chametz gomer. So some have a practice.
Cereals?
It's more than 50% of it is the grain. Mm-hmm. So the many have a practice to be machmen, not to rely on mechiras chametz for chametz bien, chametz gomer. But the mustard and the ketchup, that's the chametz ingredient, is less than 50%. That's tarubas.
Not directly Pesach related, but all year related, Rav Schechter. Is it permissible to eat at the home of a family member who is medaktik b'mitzvahs, but who does not toivel kelim?
There is a mitzvah of tvilas kelim, on metal kelim, forks and knives, and on glasses, and so on, whether they're pots and pans or they're plates that are coated with glass, that's a question. China plates coated with glass. So the Shach quotes the Issa V'Heta that Mitzupa B'Schuchas also you have to do Tfilas Kelim, and many do not follow that Shach on China dishes that are coated with glass. This is a question that the Poskim discuss, whether the Mitzvah Tfilas Kelim is only on the Balabas, it's his Mitzvah, so if I eat on his Kelim that are not Ketayvot, it's his, he's losing out on the Mitzvah, it's not my Mitzvah, should I say no? That even the guest who's eating is in violation of the Mitzvah. So in the Shulchan Aruch, it says that, it sounds like it says, even the guest is in violation. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Rav Cook has a tshuva, where he writes, it's really difficult. He would have argued the point, and he would have said that the mitzvah is only on the balabos, not on the guest, but what can we do? And Shulchan Aruch says, not like he said. So he thinks maybe can we make them on glass. Since Tfilas Kelim on glass, a simple reading in the Gemara, is that it's only with the Rabbanon, it's not the same as metal. Metal forks and knives and pots and pans, many assume that that's a real din d'oraisa. And Tfilas Kelim on glass, only with the Rabbanon. So Rav Cook says maybe it can be mekel if it's only glass. I remember a woman told me that every summer, Rav Moshe Feinstein used to drop in on her bungalow, and she used to prepare for him a cup of tea, and he always asked, he likes to drink it in a china cup. So she always felt insulted why he didn't trust her on Tfilas Kelim. She wanted to serve it in a glass. She always felt insulted because she was table her glasses. And she knew that Rav Moshe wasn't, she felt he wasn't telling the truth, that he enjoys drinking the coffee better in a china cup. She felt in her heart that's because he didn't trust her on the Tfilas Kelim. No.
Somebody just sent in a question, is the prepackaged coffee kosher for Pesach? And is the filter that contains the coffee a problem? Rabbi Gerson, is that on the website?
If it's unflavored, just ground coffee, it's always kosher for Pesach even year-round. The filters, I'm not aware of any problem with filters. Why there'd be an issue of chametz and a filter? I can't see a problem.
Rabelski?
No problem with filters, it's paper, there's no sizing in the paper.
I think during the Second World War, I think there was, coffee wasn't as available as before the war, so the coffee companies is mixed in flour in the coffee, and then when you would make your coffee, you would be mixing flour with water, it would become chametz. So that's when they started this whole story that you have to have a hashgach on the coffee. For centuries, there was no problem with coffee. And now,
we used to use postum. You remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
It was chametz gomer. I don't think it's around anymore.
Postum was for children. It's called children's coffee. Anyway, we're going to take up one last question that came in regarding koshering, though I recall that this was one of the many questions discussed in the pre-Pesach webcast that focused on koshering a number of years ago. Again, it's posted on OU website. Rabelski, how do I clean out and kosher an old electric oven and stovetop for Pesach? The stovetop has electric round coils. The oven is not self-cleaning.
The coils themselves kasha themselves every time they're used. They go through a libun chomer every time the coils turn red. There can't be any better kashing than that. But the plates of metal that cover the rest of the stove, between the burners and outside of the burners, so they should be kashered if with Leben Chomer. The whole year there's tons of food that fall all over. There's lakshin and knedlach and cakes and who knows what. And generally speaking, people take some heavy aluminum foil and cover them. And if somebody has some very beautiful looking stove tops and they want to...
But she says it's old, so...
It's old, yeah. So then they cover them up with aluminum foil. That's what everybody does. As far as the inside of the oven goes, you can kasher the inside of the oven with Leben Chomer, but it's an awful lot of work. So try to do the same thing. Try to align the oven with aluminum foil or use the inserts. For many, many years, every house had an insert. Moshe always said at the end of his Shabbos HaGodol Drasha to use an insert in an oven because kashering is leaving on the oven is not enough. There's been discussion of that back and forth for years and years and years. But the Moshe in Shabbos HaGodol Drasha always said use the insert. Today, you practically can't get a hold of one, and people do leave on the oven just for an hour or 2 hours, and to say that's Libun Kal, yeah, definitely it's Libun Kal, but to say it's Libun Chomer, and so some people say, well, today people don't put food directly on the racks or the walls, everything is put into pans. And the only thing that you could be worried about is a little zeya. So therefore, Leben Kal would be good enough. But I tell you, to go through the trouble of kashering, use blowtorches, or take coals and put them in there, you stand a chance of ruining the whole thermostat system. You got to be a shtickle expert to know how to do it without destroying the oven. To try to line the top of the oven, that's about it. And otherwise, if you can't do that, you can't get an insert. So get top of the stove baking. Years back, there was very, very popular top of the stove baking equipment. They called it a wonder baker. It had a hole in the middle, and everybody had it in the homes, and some people used it bedafke for Pesach. Some people had it on top of the stove ovens, which they placed and had the flame under it, and there was a little box that opened and closed. I don't think those are around anymore. That's the best I could offer.
Okay, Yisrael Am Kedoshim Hem. So they were listening to the webcast, Rebelsky, and someone just sent a follow-up question. Is one allowed to use paper towels with hot food on Pesach? How about year-round? Is there a problem with tarfus? So I think we need to reiterate what you said, Rebelsky.
I would love to be able to make some people feel good and tell them that it is an issue there. And that I all of the knowledge and the research and inquiries and everything else that the OU tried to do in the consultation with knowledgeable people and experts, companies and everything, we haven't found anything that should be any cause for alarm, and that there's no problem at all.
Before we close, we still have 5 minutes until 4 o'clock. I want to go back to something we asked a few years ago, and if I might say, all of the enormous amount of knowledge and information of halacha, of Torah, that is learned here and that can be reinforced by listening to the webcast that will be posted hopefully within a day or two on our website, and review the old webcasts. There's so much information there. But it's interesting that some of the Frum websites focused on one question which they posted several times for several days before Pesach. Rav Schechter and Rav Belsky's response to this question: what should be the focus of parents at the Leila Seder? The kids come home from yeshivas with big notebooks, with machberes, with tens and tens of pages of midroshim and zachen and sipurim and so on and so on and so forth, and the father is sitting there with all this information in front of him that the kids want to share. But at the end of the night, not at the end of the day, at the end of the night, what should children walk away from the Seder with? Rav Schechter or Rav Belsky?
We have to explain. We have to have a debt of gratitude to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for taking us down to Mitzrayim and for taking us out. Because, like, this is the question, what do you mean? He put us into the predicament, so why do we have to thank him for taking us out? The answer is no. That's what made us into a holy nation. We went through the suffering of Mitzrayim, and then Yetzias Mitzrayim purified us. We have to say the whole purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim, all the miracles, all the nisim and flaws, we died in Kani Hashem to demonstrate all the Ikori HaMuna, that it became clear to our ancestors, our forefathers, that God exists, that He alone exists, He has full control of everything that happens in the world. He knows what's happening, and He cares about what's happening. He rewards the tzaddikim and He punishes the rishoyim, all of the Ikori HaMuna, and that He's interested in bringing Gula. He brought a Gula, He will bring a Gula Hasida. All of the principles of faith were demonstrated with all the nisim and flaws, and Torah Min HaShamayim was demonstrated. We have to emphasize all of the Ikori HaMuna were demonstrated through the whole nisim and flaws of Yetzias Mitzrayim.
Since Rav Schechter mentioned that it's very important to take away this question from children and from older people, that what did we need the Golus in Mitzrayim and the suffering in Mitzrayim, you know that there are many mitzvahs in the Torah which are not built on Yetzias Mitzrayim, but they're built on Avdus in Mitzrayim, where the Torah says, V'atam yudatem es nefesh hager ki gerim ha'yisem beres Mitzrayim. And if not for that, we wouldn't be as sensitive as Yidden are. Or like by Leket Shikron Peah, where it says, V'zuchartu ki evad ha'yisem Mitzrayim al'keinu noichem etzavchos ador hazeh. And there are many mitzvahs that are built on the fact that we were avodim and we became sensitive and developed the midas of Yid. And this is not a small thing. Chazal tell us that there are three simonim that distinguish a Yid from other people in the world, and the Bashonim, Rachmonim, and Gamle Chasodim. And these are all midas that were honed and sharpened and developed in Mitzrayim as Avodim. Amune and Bitochen, and the other things, and the idea of Ikrim, these are midas that are Yidias and that are more associated with Yetzias Mitzrayim. But the character of the Yid, which distinguishes him, L'Olam Vod, when David HaMelech took a look at the behavior of the Givoinim, he said, V'ha-Givoinim lo'im ebnei Yisrael heina. Why? Because they weren't Rachmanim, Pashonim, Gamle Chasodim. And we got that from being in Mitzrayim. So we should appreciate having been an Eved. A Yid walks out into the street, you know, sees there's someone with a problem, he runs over to help this. I remember years ago where there was a war in Biafra. Biafra is a province in Africa which today's children don't know about, but it was one of the provinces in the Congo, and the Congo had a big fight with all of the countries in Africa, because half the wealth in Africa was in the Congo, the diamonds and all kinds of things. So they broke away, and the Biafra broke away from the rest of the Congo. So their erstwhile lovely neighbors went and tried to shech them all out. So they succeeded in killing about half of them out. So some other countries got in there and stopped the slaughter. So they made a worldwide campaign to help the orphans in Biafra give them homes, give them foods, save them now that their friends and neighbors want to eliminate them because they had the money. So they made a big international campaign, and 95% of the money came from Eden, from Jewish stores, from Jewish individuals. What did we in the world have to do with Biafra, which is in the blackest, darkest Congo in the middle of Africa? And the reason is because Yidden are Rachmonim, Baishonim, Gem Lechasodim, and Yidden try to help, they have pity, whether it's proper or not proper, that's a separate discussion, but the midah of Gem Lechasodim, Rachmonim, is something that was honed and sharpened during the time that we were Avodim. So all this is extremely important, and it just takes a lot of patience and wisdom to be able to bring this out. And many times the effort, the energy of a parent is just used up by taking care of other things which are not as essential as this group of Inyan.
But might I add, we discussed this in the past as well, today's generation are very far removed, emotionally and otherwise, from the world of Avdus, from the world, from the psyche of Mitzrayim, from all that Mitzrayim represents, from the concept of Galus. Mm-hmm. Today, Galus, what's Galus? We have everything here. Eretz Yisrael, maybe we'll go visit once a year, once in 2 years, once in 10 years, or maybe not go visit. So how do we convey to the growing generation today, to the youngsters of today, the idea, the concept that in order to experience Geula, we need to understand what Galus is, and what is Galus to today's youngster?
No, I'm tired.
Well, the Ramban in his commentary on Chumash says that the main tragedy of the Galus, Mitzrayim, was not so much that the Jews left Eretz Yisrael. That was a minor tragedy. Major tragedy was that when we were in Eretz Yisrael, we had Hashuas Hashchina. Sod olaka aleo halehem. He paraphrases a pasuk in Sefer Iyov. Chazal comment on the pasuk Vayal me'olav alekim in Chumash Bereish is that the Ovis hein hein hamarkova. The Ovis always had a Hashuas Hashchina. When we went down to Golus Mitzrayim, so we lost that Hashuas Hashchina. And then he says, when Ramban writes in his Hakdamah to Chumash Mos, when you get to the end of Chumash Mos, that's the Geula. Then he asks, where's there a Geula? But the Jews don't enter Eretz Yisrael. They don't return to Eretz Yisrael till the middle of Sefer Yoshua. So he says, no, when you get to Truma Tetzaba, Vayakol Pikudi, that's the Geula. When you have a Hashuas Hashchina, when you build a Mishkan. So true, we live in Chutz Laretz, we're missing a lot. What we have, but the Knesset, about the Midrashes, that's what the Chazal comment on the Pasuk, Ve'ilahem LeMikdash Meyat, we have Hashuas Hashchina. We're not going to have the full Gula until we have the Beis HaMikdash. But by us, we have a partial Gula, Mikdash Meyat, but you can see us about the Midrashas. That's a partial Gula. The main thing is not so much that we should yearn to have our own independent government, and Eretz Yisrael should be a religious government. Okay, we hope someday soon it'll be a religious government. But that's not the main. The main goal is the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And the Bat Knesset about the Midrashas all over the world. That's a Mikdash Miyad. It's a partial goal.
I'd like to add something. This is like closing remarks. We speak about answering the children's questions and adults' questions as well. If you would ask 100 people, where are the answers to the fear caches? Father, many times, the old, familiar Neschoes, before he says, Avodim Hayinu, so he says, Yet, Kinder, Velachakem, not Terence, after fear caches, I'm going to answer the caches. Where are the answers to the caches? Go through everything that it says. The beginning, the middle, and the end of the Haggadah, and it seems as if there's no Teretz on the fear caches, and you didn't explain why we eat matzah, you didn't explain why we eat mora, you didn't explain why we're mesubin, why we dip twice in the matbilin. And the truth is something that we have to understand. The most significant part of the Haggadah is the answer to the fear kashas, and the answer is way out in the open. It's not something hidden. When we start with them, Gamli Eloyim, the Mishnah and Psochem, Kol Shel Omer Shloshes Dvarim Halolu, Layotzer Dechavosoi, if he didn't say three things, he wasn't Yotzer with his Choiv. And, you know, there's Rishonim that say the Choiv of Matzin Mora, the Choiv of Yigal Tel Avincha. But let's just take a look at the broad question. What is it? Matzah, Pesach, Matzah, Morah. Pesach, Matzah, Morah, those are the answers to the fear kashas. You asked why we have Matzah, and I'll tell you. Al Shum Mo, Al Shum. You asked why we have Morah, I'll tell you why we have Morah. You didn't ask why we have Pesach, because we have no Pesach. But I'll tell you the Teretz anyway. And you asked why there's Mesubin and why there's Matpilin. And the answer is Lefichach Anachem Chayam Lahoidus Olahalev, and Bechol Dor V'Dor Chayav Adam Leisas Asmiki Lo Yotzer Yitzrayim, and that's why we do all these things to celebrate and to be happy, and all this is something that has to be given over to. What's the significance of all the things that we do by the Seder, and what does it teach us, and about what we glean from the Geula and from the Golus? These are things that are so urgent, so important to know. And we have to take notice of them. Very often, in families, it comes to Yom Gamli Eloyme, there's a big clap, and everybody rushes to all the different rooms, all the ladies and all the children, and everybody's brought back to the Pesach after diapering the children and putting them to sleep and doing this and doing that. And told, now comes the high point. Everybody, say together, Pesach. Everybody says Pesach. The Matzah Umorah. That's it. Everybody runs back to where they came from. They said these three magic words. And that's it. The three magic words have absolutely no value unless they're explained, because that's the entire Tachlis, is why is there Pesach? Why is there Matzah? More. Why is there more? And that you have to say it and give the explanation and answer the kashas that we're asking. We're going to say that it's something that everybody has to be aware of and put a lot of thinking and a lot of mind and a lot of feeling into providing the answers, which will guarantee the survival of Yiddishkeit, the kiyum of the Torah in Klal Yisrael, the Messiah. All so important and so essential, there's no way of stressing, overstressing.
A great yisher koyach, a very, very big yisher koyach to our poskim, to Rav Belsky, to Rav Schechter, to Rav Gerstin, and to Rabbi Farrell for their assistance always. Again, any questions that we were not able to respond to or any follow-up questions, please feel free to email to me at safranee@ou.org, safranee@ou.org. And as always, we will try our very best to send the responses as promptly as possible. The webcast itself, for those who have not been able to tune in live, will be posted on the OU website, on the OU Kosher website, tomorrow, the next day, as soon as we're able to put it all together. I extend thanks, as always, to our chief engineer, Dan Deschelson, for all of his help, assistance, and cooperation. To all of you, to Klal Yisrael, Echakosha v'sameach, we should be zoichetake to Geula Shleima b'korov. Thank you so much.
As always, thank you very much for the conduct of this interview and webcast. Wonderful.